Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Music Business Podcast presented by Hypebot.com. I'm your host, Courtney Harding, and today we're joined by Per Emanuelsson, who is the co-founder and CEO of Soundtrap. Per, it's great to have you here, and I'm looking forward to chatting with you.
Thank you very much.
First of all, great. So thank you for coming, and if you wouldn't mind telling our listeners a little bit about yourself and also Soundtrap.
Thanks. I'm from Sweden, and maybe that's because you will hear that on my accent, maybe. So we're based in Stockholm. I have a background in both music and technology. So I used to play the guitar as I was a kid, and then I've also been a programmer, basically, since I was a kid. That's the same for my co-founder, Björn, as well. And Fredrik, the other co-founder, has also been in the music business for a very long time. So Soundtrap is about making music online together from any device. So basically, you can start a recording on your iPad on the bus, then you can continue when you go home on your computer on the same recording, use the software instruments, of course. You can invite a friend who's using a Chromebook and another friend in New York using a Windows machine, and then you find a new kind of vocalist in Cape Town, and you all work in the same product at the same time. From multiple devices. So that's what Soundtrap is about.
And how did you come up with the idea for Soundtrap?
As I said, we're musicians ourselves, and we think that there are three main problems in music making today. The first problem is that it's way too complex. So if you open up a music recording studio tool that's been out there for ages, of course, they're built for professional producers and for professional kind of student technicians. They're not built directly for the musician, which means that the audience for those tools are not directly the same type of audience that actually would like to record the software. So that's the first problem, that is way too complex. The second thing is that they're usually tied to one and the same computer. So usually they are old-fashioned software that you download on a computer, which means that you're stuck to that computer. You have a lot of maybe third-party plugins and a lot of different types of other software you need, which means that if you would like to be creative on the bus or when you're at a friend's place or a parent's place and so on, then you cannot be that. And thirdly, it's hard to find time and it's hard to find people to play with. So maybe you're very good at playing hard rock guitar solos, but you're living in the woods of Stockholm or Sweden somewhere, and you don't have any double pedal drummers nearby. But maybe there are like 20 of them in LA that would just love to play with you. So that's the reasons why we saw this, and we, as I said, we're musicians ourselves. So that's why we wanted to build Soundtrap. So Soundtrap is easy to use. We're focusing on easiness. It's multi-device, works on cross all platforms, and it's in the cloud, and it's collaborative.
So describe to me a little bit of a typical user experience. So let's say, just for sake of example, I'm a guitarist. I have a track that I've been working on. I just want to sort of, you know, throw it up there and see what happens. So do I put it up there and other people can find it and add to it? Or do I do stuff in real time with people? How does the process work?
So of course you can use it as a single user as well. So it's basically a complete music making studio directly in the browser. So you can start, if you're a guitarist, for example, you can plug in your guitar and you can add effects. We have amplifiers and effects and everything, and record that directly into the studio. Then if you say, let's say that you're not that good at playing the bass or you need a pianist, then you can search for a pianist and you could invite them to your project. So it's a little bit like Google Docs, but for kind of music making. Then once you're in the project, you're working in the same project and you see each other changes and you hear each other changes. And then you have a video chat capability built in directly to the tool. So you're not just that you are hearing what the other person is playing, you can actually see and interact with them. So we're creating this kind of virtual studio environment where you're kind of extending the studio room to the whole world, basically.
Right. And then how does it work? And this is getting into more sort of technical aspect of things. How does it work in terms of ownership of the music? So, you know, let's say, for example, just going back to the sort of hypothetical, I'm a guitar player. I find a vocalist in LA. I'm in New York. I find a great drummer that's in Stockholm. We find a killer bassist that's in like the Philippines. We write a great song together.
Yeah.
Like, what are our next steps? Is it something where we could theoretically shop it to a label? How does it sort of work from there?
So you could publish the work from Soundtrappers, of course, as well. You could put it out on social media. You can upload it to Facebook and whatever. We are not focusing on the distribution side of the music making. We're focusing on making the music, and then you can distribute it to multiple different platforms. We have integrations with other solutions, making it possible to get it out on Spotify and Google Play and so on immediately. But we're not directly focusing on that part. And also, the first part of the question was about music rights. That's also, we haven't kind of touched into that area. There are other companies that are doing that, but which we are talking about with as well. But right now it's like it used to be, like you need to decide who owns what and how much and so on. So we're not kind of, we're not into that use case at the moment.
With your current user base, do you see a lot of people sort of taking the tracks that they've built and maybe trying to go further with them in terms of, you know, proper distribution, or is it more sort of a fun thing where it's like, hey, I just want to jam with some new people. Maybe we'll write a cool song. Maybe we won't. But it's just a fun sort of way to make myself a better musician.
Yeah, it's both of it, actually. So on the consumer side, and as I said in the beginning, I'm here actually in Florida right now on the Future of Education Technology Conference. We could talk a little bit more about that. But it's used a lot in schools, Soundtrack. But there are different use cases here. So as I said, since we are lowering the kind of entrance barrier for people to getting in to actually record their own stuff. Of course, there's a lot of amateur musicians out there that love this, and they might not have the goal to making kind of music public in that way. They just want to have fun, maybe. So there's a lot of music making going on for single users and also collaborations where they just make music for their own private sake. Maybe showing it for friends and parents and so on, of course. But then there are also a lot of professional music, a lot of professional musicians that are using Soundtrap as a kind of a sketch pad to kind of create songs that they might then go into another type of professional studio to do the kind of the final recording with. So they're using it a lot for sketch padding. So we have both use cases, I would say, both kind of professional users using it for that, and also more amateur musicians just having a little bit more fun.
So where are your users typically based? Are they mostly in Europe? Are they in the States? Are they in other territories? Do you sort of have a market in places where it's maybe harder to find other people to play music with?
Right now, it's we have grown, and we are growing very fast. So we've grown from 20,000 users to 300,000 users now in less than 12 months. And we are mainly in the U.S. So it's about like 50% of the consumer market is in the U.S. and almost like 80% of the education market in the U.S.
Interesting. And if you talk to your users in the U.S., you know, do they express to you that it's hard for them to find people to play music with? Or is this more just sort of a way that's like easy to go online and kind of do it whenever, as opposed to, you know, playing music with your friends where you have to schedule a time?
I would say it's both. It's definitely the easiness that people are talking a lot about, and kind of the top three quotes that we get from users when we ask them, and we ask them a lot in different type of small questions in the tool, is that it's awesome. It's amazing, and I love it, and I never find an easier way to make music. So I think the easiness is really appealing to our user base. But also many of them express that now for the first time they have found new people to play with, which they have never ever would have found otherwise. And we have had some really good collaborations with people that have not known each other before entering Soundtrap, made great music actually, which is really fun to listen to from our point of view as well.
Cool. Are there certain collaborations that you've maybe heard that you really like? Like, are there certain?
Definitely.
So tell me about some of these.
There was a guy in the U.S. Let me see if I find it here. They started to record something and then reached out through our what we call shouts. So you can publish a shout. and asked for a vocalist, or if it was the other way around. I'm not 100% sure here, but they found each other, and she was doing background vocals and vocals on his tune, and it's totally amazing. They're so good, and they never found each other before.
Great. And then did they kind of continue working together? Do you know, or is
They have done at least two songs together. Yes, they have. I'll look at their profile pages now here. So.
Interesting. What are the markets that you're kind of targeting in the next maybe couple of years? I mean, are there certain markets where you think this could be really transformative, especially maybe markets where, again, it's harder to find people to collaborate with?
Do you mean because they are kind of separated geographically or?
Yeah, so I'm kind of thinking of a few use cases. I mean, one is like, you know, countries like South Africa,
yeah,
where, you know, yeah, there's a lot of cool musicians there, but it's still a fairly small market, and they're also very isolated geographically.
Yeah, definitely.
And that's, the other markets I'm thinking of are like in the Middle East, where, you know, like Saudi Arabia, for example, you can't publicly make music. You can make music in your bedroom, but you can't perform it in public. And also, you know, there's just because of the fear of that, there's not a ton of musicians around. So, you know, a market like that, again, I could see something like this being not just cool and fun, which it, I think it is, but really transformative.
Yeah, definitely. And that's what we see. And also in the educational market as well, there's a couple of those use cases. So we have, for example, rural schools in the U.S., which have limited ability to make music in the classroom because there's so few people. And then the kind of the teachers have reached out to organizations containing professional composers and set up kind of collaborations between professional composers and school kids, where the school kids have made music together with the professional composers and so on. And so we have a number of those really interesting collaborations going on. And definitely I can see what you're saying as well. So if you like, for example, maybe this is a little bit generic thing, but if you like a didgeridoo player, then might not be that many where you're living. But in Australia, maybe there are a lot more people playing that particular instrument. So you can also kind of find kind of new spices to your mix by reaching out to people in other parts of the world, definitely.
Yeah, I mean, and that's, I think, one of the most interesting things is that, again, you can do something which has really never been done before, or at least not until very recently, which is create music with people anywhere in the world. And certainly that opens up a whole new world of sort of, again, if you're a didgeridoo player, not many of you, so you can actually collaborate maybe with other experts. So let's switch over to the education side of things, because I think that that's something that really doesn't get talked about in the music startup space as much. You know, I see a lot of music startups that are all trying to do music discovery, or they're trying to do like reinventing ticketing, and that's great. Like, that's awesome. Those are cool things. But, you know, the education space, while it's maybe not as sort of hip and sexy as other spaces, is vitally important and also really, really huge.
So,
you know, you mentioned you were in Florida for a music education conference. Tell me a little bit, A, about how you guys decided to go into this education space, and B, what you've done so far.
Yeah. So the cool thing is that we actually didn't decide. They started to use Soundtrap. So it was in the beginning of the year that we saw that we were starting to get a lot of reviews from edtech bloggers. A lot of teachers were starting to reach out on Twitter saying that we really love this, because there's kind of three main points that I made before about easy to use, multi-platform online collaborative. Those appeal so much to modern schools today. Many of them have switched maybe to Chromebook environment, where they need to use online cloud-based solutions. They are maybe using bring your own devices schemes in the schools, so that the students can bring their own devices. So they need solutions that work cross platforms. They cannot choose an old-fashioned download, but software that only works on Mac, for example, because the kids won't have a Mac at home, so they cannot do homeworks at home and so on. So the teachers were starting to reach out to us when we still just had the consumer version of Soundtrap. And then we were actually asked by the American Association of School Librarians. They phoned us up and said, hey, you've been voted as the best website for teaching and learning 2015 by American teachers. So that was also kind of a crazy thing, because we just started to notice then that it was used so much in schools. And then we also formed a global formal partnership with Google in the education area. So we're a Google partner for education. And then it picked up from that. So during the year we have now more than 1,000 schools using Soundtrap already. Wow. And what we added, and now we're actually releasing this now next week. We're releasing the Soundtrap for Education plan, which is both a kind of heavily discounted plan for schools, but also a COPPA compliant environment, so they can collaborate within a school or with selected other schools, but they don't need to be bothered by the rest of the internet, and also an integration with Google Classroom, which is a learning management system, so you can do assignment and you kind of invite students automatically into Soundtrap.
That's so interesting. Why do you think no one else has really gone into this space yet? I mean, this, again, the way you're describing it, it seems so obvious.
Yeah. I think both related to technology. So we've been very, very innovative when it comes to using the modern web audio, web MIDI, and web RTC standards in the HTML5. I'm going a little bit technical here, but because that is the standardizations that were needed to do this really cross-platform. Before, it's been able to do stuff in, for example, Flash and so on, but they have their limitations, those types of apps. And since you know, obviously, Flash is something that is going out now. But with the new standards in HTML5, there are completely new possibilities of actually making cross-platform software in a completely new way when it comes to music. And we saw this very early on, actually. So we were one of the first ones that were starting to do this. So we were also actually invited by Google on Google I.O. already 2014 in San Francisco, and did a presentation together with them, 45 minutes, showcasing this. So I think one of the reasons we saw this very early on and been able to get a very good head start.
Great. So I'd like to talk a little bit more broadly about the music startup landscape, because, you know, it's interesting. So I found out about you guys because you were on a list of the top 20 startups to watch.
Yeah.
That that Music Ally put out, which is great. But then I always think, like, I look back through some of these lists from a few years ago, and there was a list of the, you know, 20 startups to watch at MeetM 2012. And yeah. I found that list in my email when I was searching for something, and I just, for fun, I had a little bit extra time. I looked at all these startups, and 80% of them were gone. They had either pivoted or they had just gone under. And, you know, the music startup environment, just like the general startup environment, is very, very tough. So, you know, one of the things I always ask people who found music startups is, you know, you are obviously a very intelligent person who could be doing a lot of other things. Why did you decide to do this?
I think if you look at the startup world in general, I think there's a lot of startups that you read about in 2012, which isn't anymore in the scene. So I think it's not just a kind of a music startup thing. It's probably about running startups in general, which is a very hard thing to do. It's very competitive and so on. And I think one of our strengths as well is that we have worked. I've been working, for example, 17 years as a business and IT consultant, helping startups and other big businesses, and doing product managing for big banks in like 100 plus people projects. So we have done a lot of kind of business stuff before we do this. And also Björn, our co-founder, he was the CTO of a big online game poker engine that was acquired a couple of years ago. So he's also done a kind of a startup journey himself before Soundtrap. So I think it goes more into it than just being knowledgeable in music and to be able to program something that is good. You also need to have an experience in running businesses and specifically running a startup. So there's so many components in running a startup, and you need to be good at all of them, otherwise you won't survive. So it's not just always about the idea.
And what about the music startup scene in Sweden? I mean, everyone sort of knows about Spotify, and Spotify seems to like loom the largest, but is there a little bit more of a startup ecosystem in Sweden?
Definitely. Yeah. So Stockholm is, after Silicon Valley, the city that produces most unicorns per capita in the world. So there's a huge amount of startups in Stockholm, and also very many successful ones. For example, Skype, as you know Minecraft, Spotify, obviously. SoundCloud was actually started in Stockholm, the Swedish people, but they moved it to Berlin. So there's a number of huge successes in the startup world in general, and some of them actually just in music tech.
And why do you think that is? Why is Stockholm such a hotspot for technology and startups?
I think Sweden has always been a very good entrepreneurial country, with IKEA and Ericsson and all those kind of big companies and businesses that many people know about, Volvo and so on. So I think it's something that goes back more than 100 years. But also lately, there's been a technology side of that. There are very many people. There are we have a good school system, so it's free for education. You know, you can take a university degree without paying anything in Stockholm, Sweden. And there's a lot of engineers that have been working on a lot of good startups already since the last IT boom. And also music-wise, if we go into the music tech area, there's a lot of musicians and a very much of a legacy when it comes to music in Sweden. For example, ABBA, you know, all of them. So both kind of that combination of music production and startups and entrepreneurial things in general is something that has been going on in Sweden for ages.
Cool. Well, so let's talk about the rest of 2016. You know, we just started the year. What are your big plans and goals for this year? And where would you like to be if I called you a year from now and said, what happened in the last year?
Yeah, as I said, we are growing heavily. We are growing both on the consumer side and the educational side. So what we'll see is that we'll continue that growth, hopefully kind of accelerating even more. I think we are going to see a number of very high-impact, interesting partnerships, also both on the consumer side and the educational side, reaching out to the market. We are continually adding both features and improving the product. We're very much focused on listening to our users, but also trying to be innovative. That's a kind of a hard balance sometimes to strike, but we are continuously improving Soundtrap to include more and better features and focusing on usability. So you will see even more things to use, a bigger community, even more collaboration going on, and a lot more schools start using this.
Great. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with us today. If people want to find you online or Soundtrap online, where can they go?
They can find me on Twitter. Or they can find me, they can send me an email, of course, as well, on soundtrap.com, pear@soundtrap.com.
Okay. And is Soundtrap on social media, or should they just go to the website?
Yeah, so they can go to our Twitter account. So that's just Soundtrap. Or they could send us a general email if they like as well on a support email.
Great. Well, Per, thanks so much for joining us today. And if you've enjoyed this podcast, please feel free to follow us on SoundCloud or iTunes. And if you like us, please be sure to leave a review on iTunes. Thanks for listening, and we'll bring you more podcasts soon.
Thank you very much.